You might not expect the memoirs of a 19th century Jewish shopkeeper in a small Bohemian town to make for gripping reading, but Shimon Vels, who was born in 1853, was no ordinary shopkeeper. His account of his life and the lives of those around him draws us into a lost world. Not only is Vels a wonderful storyteller, but he also writes with a remarkable literary sophistication. The book is full of humor and local color, but is also rich in literary references, and there are numerous asides where the author comments on the prejudices and social injustices of the time. In this week's Czech Books, we hear extracts from the memoirs, and David Vaughan talks to the writer's great-grandson, Colin Vels, and to Jerry Turner, who has translated the book, and thanks to whom the manuscript first came to light after lying in a box in an English suburb for half a century.
The title of the memoirs, Ubernatu, refers to the house in the village of Osek in West Bohemia, where Shimon Vels spent much of his life, and where his family had been settled for generations. The house is named after his father, Bernard, who was born in 1807 and is a central figure in the book. He had a hard life, even by the standards of the time, selling cloth from door to door, as we find out as we read about the author's childhood.
When I was about 3 years old, I used to go with my sister Betty, who was 4 1/4 years older than me, to meet my father in the evening on his way home with his wares from hawking round the houses. We would stop at the brook on the way to Březina or by the priest's pool, and she would give me a wash and comb my hair, something I frequently required, and then we would happily carry on up to the appointed mound where Papa could rest his pack and pick it up again more easily. We would wait there and peer into the distance for the first sight of his approach. And then we would run to meet him and lead him to the place where the poor soul would take the pack off his back and rest, wiping the sweat from his brow.
At home, in the evening and at the weekend, he would tell the children stories and sing them rhymes, instilling in them a desire to learn.
We looked forward so much to Friday, when Papa would come home 2 hours earlier than usual so as to have time to shave. He would boil up a bluish-green ointment out of glycerin, which he would spread on his face and scrape off with a wooden knife. I expect it stung him dreadfully, poor man, but Jews were not allowed to shave with a razor. After shaving, he would prepare the 6-branched hanging lamp, making cotton-wool wicks and filling it with oil. We all washed. Mama would wash us little ones. We men of the family would dress up for the church. When we came home from the service, Papa would bless us all, laying both his hands on our heads and saying the Hebrew blessing, Yevarech Echo Adonai. After supper, we would all remain at table, and as Papa had had plenty of time to rest on Friday and was no longer tired, he would be particularly entertaining that evening, and we would listen to him spellbound. On weekdays, Papa would rise at 5 o'clock and spend over an hour in prayer, and it was nearly 7 o'clock by the time he had finished his breakfast. Then he would prepare his pack and set off from the house. On Saturday, though, when he did not have to rise so early, Betty and I would creep into his bed and listen enraptured to his stories. When one came to an end, we would beg him for another, and he would go on thinking up more.
In the mid-19th century, Jews in Bohemia still suffered widespread discrimination and opportunities were limited. But Shimon Vels' father was determined that his children should have all the opportunities available. Jerry Turner picks up the story of Shimon's childhood.
He did have a few years at the school in Rokycany. Then off he went to Prague as an apprentice in a hardware shop. And getting to Wenceslas Square and a men's draper's must have been the heights of his ambition at that time. And then to be called back because of his father's death to this little village to look after this little shop must have been an awfully traumatic experience for him. And he must have felt cut off in many ways.
But despite the early death of his father, Shimon Vels made a success of his business, as we find out in the course of the book. During his time in Prague, he must have been an untypical apprentice, going to the theatre whenever he could and reading everything he could get his hands on. The only thing I spent money on was the theatre, he writes. How I loved the theatre, and that love has stayed with me all my days. He may have ended up leading a provincial life back in his home village, but like his own father before him, it is quite clear that he never lost his sharpness and intellectual curiosity. And also like his father before him, he did his best to give his son Rudolf the best possible start in life. Jerry Turner.
Knowing a bit about Czech history at that time, and certainly the attitude of the latent anti-Semitism that there was in the cities, to find a Jewish writer who who chats and had arguments with the village priest and sends his son to the Premonstratensian College in Pilsen and has the guts to take his son away from it because he wouldn't have his son bullied. I mean, the fact that a village child had actually been accepted into the Premonstratensian College in Pilsen was something terribly unusual anyway. And yet he took him away from it and put him into the technical grammar, which set him on the road to being one of the greatest architects in pre-war Prague.
The father and the son were close. Here is another vivid extract from the book, a dramatic incident from when Rudolf is still a little boy.
They were building a new railway bridge on the way to Chrast near Smečice over the river Klabavka, which flowed at the bottom of a gorge 20 meters deep. The piles were stone-clad, as were also the supporting pillars on each bank, and I was curious how they intended to shift the ready-made iron bridge onto the stone supports. And of course, there was no question of going anywhere without my little friend Rudolf. We were off one Sunday in July 1889 at 5 in the morning, and in 3 hours we had covered that distance of 11 kilometers. There were already many spectators by 8 o'clock, and it was worth coming to see. The immense weight of the iron construction complete with the track started to shift from one bank to the other in total silence. The spectators all held their breath at the sight of the engineer's skillful work. I was standing in about the third row from the front, and all of a sudden, the little lad broke away from me and wormed his way through to the front in order to get a better view, but he was unable to keep his balance there on the edge of the chasm and hurtled downwards. We watched in horror as he went head over heels down the sheer slope towards the river. I gripped the person next to me and shut my eyes so as not to see him hit the bottom of the gorge. Then, as if in a dream, I heard a cry and the clamor of the people. "The bush has broken his fall!" I looked down. Below me lay the little body, and it was not moving. I ran down to the river by a roundabout path, in the company of several others. Little Rudolf was just picking himself up. Nothing at all had happened to him. I felt him all over, and he had not even been grazed. Only when I got to the bottom did I feel queasy. I could see that just a few feet more and he would have drowned. I took him by the hand, and we scrambled back up, helping each other. Back at the top, one woman said to him, "Oh, you confounded little whippersnapper! I could already see your daddy gathering up your little bones into his hanky." But he started to brag. "Not at all, ma'am. I'm a good gymnast. I was just doing perfect somersaults and headsprungs until I got myself nicely to the bottom." "You little scallywag," another woman burst in. "I still haven't gotten over it yet." And another, "Your papa should give you a good hiding." He turned and looked at me rather anxiously. "Papa, we shan't say anything to mother about it, shall we?"
Shimon Weil's memoirs cover the period up to 1897, by which time Rudolf was already at the Technical Grammar School in Pilsen. But this story does not end with the end of the memoirs itself. Perhaps watching the new railway bridge being built was a childhood experience that inspired Rudolf to become an architect. He studied in Vienna under Adolf Loos and went on to become one of the most prolific Czech architects of the 20s and 30s. His elegant 1930s Prague apartment buildings, using modern building techniques and materials like steel, glass, concrete and ceramic, are among the most expressive examples of Czech functionalism. Shimon, who died in 1922, lived just long enough to see the beginnings of his son's success. Rudolf himself had two sons, Tomáš and Martin. When the Germans occupied Prague in March 1939, Tomáš was 18. He managed to flee. His son, Rudolf's grandson and Shimon's great-grandson, is Colin Wells. He tells us how Tomáš came to reach Britain.
He felt that he had to escape from Czechoslovakia, and he begged his parents that he could take his brother with him, but they said no, he's too young. He was 14, my father was 18, So my father then managed, through various underground organisations, to escape across Poland and managed to get a boat from Poland across to England. And that's how he managed to escape.
In the meantime, during the war, both his parents and his younger brother perished in the Holocaust. They were murdered.
There's various bits of documentation to say what actually happened to his parents then. And they eventually were rounded up in 1943 and taken off to Terezin and then to Auschwitz and murdered, yeah.
During the war, your father served in the Royal Air Force. And then after the war, he came back to Prague, didn't he?
Well, yeah, with a friend, he drove all the way to Prague and managed to get some of the belongings. His parents had left some of their belongings with some close Protestant friends, so they were kept safe and they could bring a lot of them back to the UK. Yeah.
And then in the UK, he had a family. You're the product of that. And these boxes that remained, did they remain more or less unopened and ignored over the years?
Well, they were always in this cupboard, and as a young child I can remember looking at them, not understanding what they were. A lot of the documents were in Czech and they were in German. But my father was never willing to talk about them at all. He never showed us the photographs.
You think it was just too painful to go back to all that?
I can only imagine that was the reason. Any information about them I got from my mother, but my father just didn't talk about it at all. I can't remember a word that he ever talked about his parents or his brother.
And among all these objects, these things from Czechoslovakia, there was this handwritten, bound manuscript. How did you come to realise what this is and the importance of it?
Well, this most beautiful handwritten book, it's about 3/4 of an inch thick, and it was beautifully bound, and it had a most fantastic picture, a drawn picture on the front, and we didn't know where the picture was of at all. And we discovered its importance because we had this a friend of ours who was actually a Czech translator, and my wife one day was walking with him in Hemel Hempstead High Street and said, "Oh, we found this book. I've got no idea. It's got the name Simon Wells or Simon Wells, it looked like to us, and we don't know what it means at all."
The Czech translator friend was Jerry Turner, at the time also living in the same town just outside London. They brought the book round for Jerry and Jerry's Czech wife, Alice, to look at. Jerry picks up the story.
There was this magnificent leather-bound book, Ubernatu, Simon Wells. We opened it up and Alice started to read it. I was chatting away to Colin and his wife and she started to read it and then she sort of went garump and said, this is where I was born. You know, the first sentence is, in a little room in house number 15 in Osek on the first floor on the 20th of April 1853, I came to the world. And she said, well, this is just 5 miles down the road from where I was born. So there was that family connection. And we read the story, and we were absolutely thrilled, of course.
I asked Jerry if he would translate it for us, and he did the translation. And so that made it available to us as a family.
It must mean a lot to you, given that you had nothing to start with.
Well, families have their family tree, which is a very thin description of what actually families are about. What the book did for us was actually made it so colourful. The real lives of people and what actually went on and how they thought and what they did. It's an unusual thing for a family to have a chronicle like that. And it's so beautifully written as well.
And there is also a very moving aspect to this, is the fact that the reason why the manuscript survives is because it was all transcribed by your grandfather, the architect Rudolf Wells, at a time when, during the Nazi occupation of Prague, being Jewish, he wasn't allowed to work as an architect, was he? And that was the time when he transcribed the entire memoirs of his father.
Well, it was a complaint by him to his wife that he didn't have anything to do. And I think his wife, Ida, said, why don't you write out all those bits of paper that your father had written all these stories on and make it into a book?
And also another thing that survives from the time, also because he wasn't able to work, are a lot of drawings and sketches that he did as well.
Yeah, he did what work he could. And he was, in my view, a fantastic artist. And a lot of his drawings, charcoal drawings and pen drawings, did survive. And they survived where my grandparents didn't, yeah.
And I think, in a sense, it makes the horror of what happened to your grandparents, the fact that here they were, a successful Prague family, highly respected, suddenly sent to this inferno of the Holocaust, of Auschwitz, the fact that we have the whole background of the family and the world that they came from preserved through his father's diary, somehow it magnifies still further, I feel, the horror of what happened, the fact that it was not just lives that were destroyed, but a whole world.
It takes it from facts that people died, which is a sort of dry fact, into a very human fact, and one can imagine oneself being in that sort of situation, because the story of their lives is all filled in, not just bare facts.
Thanks to Jerry and Alice Turner, a copy of the manuscript of U Bernátu reached the Czech Republic. This was still a few years before the fall of communism, and on a visit to Prague, Alice gave the text to the dissident poet and publisher Zbigniew Hejda, who was immediately enchanted by what he read. He published the memoirs in Samizdat. At that time, from the point of view of the regime, books with a Jewish theme were more or less taboo. Since the fall of communism, the book has been republished several times. It has been extremely well translated by Jerry Turner, who is still looking for a publisher in English. In the meantime, the book continues to bring enormous pleasure to Czech readers, and perhaps most of all to Colin Wells and his family.
I think what most probably makes it unusual is that it's not about kings and queens and important rulers. It's about everyday, really very poor folk, but written in a way that one can really relate to. And it's a huge pride, actually, that this person managed to get down what their lives were about. I think there's a lot of pride in that.
The pride that you feel in your great-grandfather.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And my grandfather, for getting it all written down as well. It feels very special.